Hello and welcome to the podcast on health services research at the University of Cologne. Today with Nora Koberts as the last time, and joining us from the US, Lynn Newberry. Hello to both of you.
Hello.
Hello.
My name is Kerstin Dittmar. And in the last podcast, Nora explained the components of the magnet model and presented the Magnet for Europe study. So this time it's about the many years of experience in the US and what we in Germany can learn from it. So Lynn, I'm very pleased to have you here today.
Thank you.
And you are working at the ANCC, the American Nurses Accreditation Center. But before, you were working in a hospital which took part at the Magnet program. So tell us, how did you build it in the hospital you worked?
Well, thank you. It really took a lot longer than I thought. However, I know this sounds interesting. It didn't take as long as I thought, but it did take a long time. So I'll say it that way. When I was hired as the director of professional practice back in 2010, I started in January of 2010, and I was in a small community hospital in the United States in the state of Virginia. And my hospital was located in an area that's very heavily populated with military bases. So we had a lot of nurses that moved in and out because of their spouses. So about every 2 to 4 years, we would see a large turnover based off of where people were being stationed. So the flexibility and the mobility of nurses was great, but that also created a challenge in the fact that we were always bringing in new staff, as well as we also, really struggled with having creating a level of stability because of that. I was hired by an interim chief nursing officer who was actually working for a consulting firm and was there to change the face of nursing, if you will, in that organization. That organization had gone through 8 chief nursing officers in 7 years. Oh, so wow. There was not a lot of leadership stability. And we know that the research does really show, and anecdotally, I can tell you that that chief nursing officer is pivotal to having a stable nursing workforce, because that leader is the person who's at the C-suite and in the boardroom having conversations to support nursing. So it was a pivotal to be able to have someone with, you know, some stability. So many of my colleagues in their roles were being hired at the same time. There was what we would say here in America, cleaning house. So there was a lot of turnover with the leaders. And there was the concept of that was tasked to me of creating a magnet organization, creating the environment, if you will, that as Donna Bedian's model to kind of describe, you know, how do you put that theory in place? But it's creating those structures and processes in order to see the outcomes. And we knew that, you know, the outcome was to achieve magnet recognition, but we knew that that was going to take some time. When I met with the interim chief nursing officer a couple weeks into my work at the hospital, I said to her, I said, this is gonna take a while. And she said, well, how long do you think? And I said, I think it's gonna take 10 years. And much to my surprise, it did not take 10, it took 7. But that's still, like I said, it felt like a lifetime. And then now that I look back at it, there were so many things that had to be put in place that, when you lived in it every single day, it became kind of frustrating because for me, I wanted to be able, you know, when you take care of a patient, you oftentimes see that change and that improvement in that patient's care. And for me, the patient was my nurses and my hospital and that community. And I wanted to take care of them, but I felt like it wasn't happening fast enough at times. And then some things just happened overnight, it felt like. So for us, it was really about creating the work environment. And we had to create that work environment first. I often describe, to the nurses, especially now, is that we were using Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and our nurses needed food, water, and shelter. They needed to know that they were loved and cared for, and that they had a safe place to work. And I say that in a broad sense, but I literally mean even to the fact that they needed to know that they had a locker, that they had a place to play, to place their coat. They needed to know, where the resources were for them to be successful, whether it was just knowing that there was computers for their charting at the bedside, that they had the opportunity to take meal breaks, and that we encouraged that and supported them in that, and that we, really looked at, the work-life balance that we so desperately need still in healthcare, and we're struggling with that today. But those were the basics that we really focused in on was, how do you, make sure that your staff are taken care of, because once they feel safe and secure, they're more open and honest with what is troubling them. So as we started to develop that work environment, many of our nurse leaders started asking their staff, what is it the one thing that drives you crazy on your unit? And you have to be prepared for the answers, because they're not always nice. And they're not, they're not always kind. So, that was one of the things that we asked was, tell us one thing that if you could change how your unit worked, and I'm not talking about how much you pay you receive in your salary, and I'm not talking about, your work schedule. I'm talking about those things that just drive you crazy. And they just started coming up with all these ideas and these concepts and the things that did drive them crazy. And then I worked with the leaders and said, okay, now let's take those challenges that are structurally issues. They're definitely structure issues or conceptual issues. And let's go and do a literature search and let's evaluate, let's go and find out what other organizations have done to solve that problem. And so, many of them had not used a computer to, do an internet search in the library. We were fortunate enough that we had a librarian that actually helped us to teach us to how to do that. We also had, many of us were in school. So we relied upon one another in the various projects that we had for school to use that and bring it to work. And it just made a whole lot of sense. And so after teaching the nurses how to pull articles and show the evidence, and be able to say, well, here's a program that somebody did. Here's the research to show this evidence. Then we teased that out and tried to create and develop our own protocols and policies and procedures to be able to make those changes. And then, using what we hear of as the PDSA model, the Plan, Do, Study, Act, and really doing those steps of change. And when I say, you know, steps of change, some of them happen like immediately, like what has been happening with COVID, you know, the policies have been changing, or, you know, oh, this is how we're taking care of our patients today. Here's the procedure. And so all of those things and happening overnight. And then some things took a lot longer to change. And so we did those small steps of change and really looked at what worked well and then what didn't work well. And trust me, your staff will tell you what doesn't work well, even if you don't want to know.
Lynn, yes, do you ma'am. Have an example?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, gosh, I have tons of examples. And I'll give you a good one that actually was multidisciplinary. Mm-hmm. So, and we wrote about it in our magnet application process. It was, we had a medical surgical unit that constantly was what I called new talent rich. Because I always put it in a positive spin. This was a unit that always had new grads and had at least 60% or more of their workforce was new to practice nurses with less than 2 years of nursing experience. And that poses a challenge, but it also can be a blessing because they're new and you can really help to create the vision and teach them how to become better nurses by having, you know, having that new vision and new set of lens. So we had a project where our materials management, the department that supplies our equipment and supplies, had purchased a new, what we call PAR system. So it was the carts and the supplies in our storeroom, and they would swap out these carts and it had everything that the nurses needed. And they would take the carts down and replenish them with, you know, the material that had been used. Well, by doing that, they had a vendor come in and said, here's the new process. These are great. Your nurses will love it. And they put all of the material that nurses used in a sequential storage facilities in a way that made it much more user-friendly for the supply person to restock, but not user-friendly for the nurse. So when our nurses would go to gather their equipment for putting in a Foley catheter or doing the Foley care, it was in several different places. And it didn't make a whole lot of sense to the nurses, but it was the new way. It was, you know, brand new equipment. Everybody was excited. It was pretty. It was shiny. And they started using it. And we found that we started having catheter associated UTIs and we couldn't figure out what was going on. And so we were looking at that from what we call here in America, nurse sensitive quality indicators. And that's a dashboard that is one of the outperformance measures that Magnet looks at. And what we kept seeing that our numbers were going up. And first we were like, okay, well, is this a knowledge deficit? Do the nurses not know how to put in a Foley? Do they not know how to do Foley care? And so, you know, some leaders are like, oh, they all need education again. And you know, other leaders are like, no, this isn't an education issue. When I walk up to that new nurse and I say to them, you know, how do you put in a Foley? And they can talk me through it. That's not a knowledge deficit. And so there was, you know, a couple different camps of nurse leaders where, you know, they wanted to make sure everybody was mandated to do new learning and make sure that they all knew it. And other nurse leaders were like, no, they know how to do it. There's another problem. And so we sat down with our nurses in a staff meeting and we said, you know, here's the data. We have this problem that has been, you know, increasing and we can't figure out what's going on. And, you know, tell us what you think is happening. And one of the one of the brand new nurses that had just been there for not even 6 months says, I'll tell you what's happening. Materials management brought in these new par carts and they're awful. And Everybody looked and they were like, what do you mean that they're awful? And they're like, they're awful because I have to go to 5 different places to get all of the material that I want to do, you know, my pericare for my patient. And we were like, oh, okay. Well, tell us a little bit more about what the challenge is. And staffs just started talking and everyone chimed in with all of the problems. And they're like, no one asked us how to put this together. And so we went back to our materials management department and said, you know, we've received this feedback. We're drilling down, we're doing a root cause analysis, and we want to figure out where is the challenge. Didn't want to put the materials management department on the defensive, but that was part of the challenge, was that they had made a change in structurally how they had set up their unit to be able to provide the care that they needed to their nurses, but yet it wasn't conducive for the nurses. And which then in turn affected how they had their workflow, which negatively impacted their patient care. And so once we got everybody together and started working on how we could, you know, glean the best practice for everyone so that it was, you know, at the end of the day, it's about your patient. So sometimes you had to change some of your processes that you didn't like doing in order to better service your patient. And so it took us several months to figure it out. And we did small steps of change with that. And what we went back and looked at was our data, and we stopped having those CAUTIs, those catheter-associated UTIs. And it really came from the drive from the frontline staff, you know, telling us what was wrong and being honest, but it took the nurse leaders to take that humble approach to ask for the help and to ask, you know, what is it that is driving you crazy? So, they'll tell you. That's for sure.
So you improved your structures. You involved all the clinical nurses, and then you went to the nursing managers. They talked to each other, and then you found a way to how to improve different workflows and everything.
Yeah, you know, and there was a lot of there was a lot of back and forth, because you know there was opinions from some nurse leaders. And I use the term spray and pray just have the educators provide them with more education. They don't know what they're doing. They're new, you know, with this is what the problem is. And my nurse educators kept saying, no, we're not going to spray this education and hope that it sticks. Because if I walk up to this new to practice nurse with her preceptor and I say, tell me all the tools and equipment that you need to get together to place a Foley, to pull a Foley, to evaluate and care for that patient that has that Foley catheter, and they can articulate that very clearly, then it's not a knowledge deficit. And so there was a couple different camps that, you know, we had to really break away those walls from the leaders to get away from doing the same thing. Because they wanted, you know, they looked at it it's a knowledge deficit. And we had other nurse leaders who embraced asked the frontline staff, and use that Maslow's hierarchy of need and give them the food, water, and shelter to let them feel comfortable with telling you the challenges. And, so that took a while, because not every nurse leader led that way. And so that's where, you know, Nora, you probably talked about in the last session being a transformational leader, and that communication going back and forth from, you know, all the way from the boardroom to the bedside, and having that opportunity for the frontline staff to be able to control, nurses control the practice of nursing. And that's a true example of how those frontline nurses were able to change their practice. And it wasn't a clinical practice, it was structural and a process that was the issue. So, and it took every team member, because we had to involve, you know, materials management. We actually ended up doing some reconstruction to our nursing unit storage closet to make it more functional. So we had, you know, our maintenance guys in there doing things and changing things around. So, you know, at the end of the day, there was money spent, but the money spent was way cheaper than a patient having a catheter associated UTI. And again, it was back to the fact that we needed to take care of our patients. And that was the whole mission and vision of the organization, was to give good care to those in need.
Yeah, I have another question, but I think Kerstin wanted to ask something first, right?
You have to take time to save time.
Yes.
You have to take the time to go back and forth. So just you don't make a decision from above and right. It's not suitable. It's not feasible.
Right. Yeah. And that was some of the struggle that we had from the nursing leadership standpoint, is that, you know, our chief nursing officer really had to develop a working relationship with the frontline nurse leaders. Yeah. So not only the directors, but we have what in here in America, sometimes their titles are different: nursing director, clinical director, nurse manager, head nurse, whatever their title is, but those nurses that are responsible for the day-to-day activities of their unit and have that 24-hour accountability, they play a pivotal role in what can be the outcomes of your hospital. And they probably have the hardest job in the hospital, because they're the middle person, they're the middle man. They're torn between hearing the, you know, the challenges, and the passions that the frontline nurses had, and then the challenge of how to, you know, maintain a good budget, keep staffing, you know, keep everyone, there safe and happy. And so they're pulled in a lot of different directions, and it can be a hard place for them, but they're the ones that, you know, were so pivotal in being able to hear and have, you know, to listen. And sometimes, you know, that's what the staff needed more than anything else. They needed a leader who listened and not just had a knee-jerk response to, oh, here's the problem, you need to fix it.
Yeah. I can imagine it could be difficult if you are sitting as nurse leader in a board meeting and the medical leader, for example, tells you, why can't you find a solution? Why have to you ask your staff for a solution? Just do it.
Yes, just do it. You know, that poor Nike, you know, has that whole mantra of just do it. Well, not just doing it doesn't always work, because you know, and Henry Ford, you know, talks about change, and you know, if you always do the same thing, you're going to get the same result. And that's where, you know, you have to open your eyes and your ears to listen. And while I love to talk and tell my story, sometimes it's about listening to your staff tell their story. That takes a lot of time though to do that. And as a leader, we're so ingrained in doing something and seeing a result. And any individual really, I mean, that's that positive reinforcement of, we did it, we got a result, let's move on. And what you find is that sometimes it's not about, you know, doing, but, doing one thing, but it's trying different things to figure out which is the best way. And that was the interesting thing too, was that within this hospital, there were several nursing units, and it wasn't just this one med-surg unit that had the challenge, but structurally, the other nursing unit supply carts were developed a little differently because of their size of their closets or where things were stored. So they had other issues that bubbled up as a result of it. And so, you know, I say to nurse leaders all the time, use your hospital, treat your hospital like you would a patient. how you look at them, and each unit is their own little micro system within the macro system of healthcare. And so, you know, your individual patient has to be cared for special. So there's three of us together today, and we all may have received the same diagnosis, but our care plan is going to be different based off of who we are. And you have to take that individual approach. Every nursing unit and every hospital is different. And so that's, you know, when we talk about Magnet's not prescriptive of you do it this particular way, but that we know the research is that if you do have these outcomes, you will be outperforming. So we don't tell you how to do it at the American Nursing Credentialing Center. We just say that conceptually, this is the best practice. Now you got to figure out how it works best in your organization. Yeah. So, yeah. And that's why using evidence-based practice and nurses doing nursing research is so important, because we add to the body of knowledge by doing those things and doing those small steps of change and testing it.
Yeah. So Lynn, how do you, like in Germany, it's like between doctors and nurses, how to involve doctors into the process?
And it was extremely difficult. So the same particular unit, and God love them, because they were our new talent rich unit. And I said it in such a positive way all the time, because they oftentimes felt beat up because of the fact that they were new graduate nurses. And I would say, you know, to them, well, my patient doesn't want me to take care of them because they say I'm a new graduate nurse. And I say, no, that's where you need to flip it. And we worked with our preceptors to coach them too, and say, you know, if somebody says, well, I don't want you to take care of me because you're new, then I would always flip it and say, no, they've just graduated from nursing school. They have come out of school with the latest and greatest research and education and training, and they're teaching me, and I've been a nurse for 30 years, and I just learned something yesterday that they taught me. And so by doing that and really managing them up in front of their patients, that helped. But we had to do that. We had to teach our nurses how to manage each other up in front of our physicians too. That same particular unit had communication trouble with their physicians. The physicians were always angry because, you know, they would vent to the chief nursing officer and in the boardroom about how the nurses didn't know how to do their job, or they didn't call me and tell me that the person was having a problem. And the challenge was that when you sat down with these new nurses and you asked them how many times in nursing school did they get to talk to the physician who was taking care of that patient while they were doing their clinical rotation, oftentimes they would say, I've never called a doctor before I graduated from nursing school. And so we would theoretically go, well, there's the problem. You didn't get to practice. And we know that practice, you know, that level of confidence and competency goes hand in hand. So there was no confidence for those new to practice nurses. And even those who were experienced were also uncomfortable, because sometimes it was physicians behaving badly and that they needed to have a conversation. And that was, you know, that was handled by the nurse leaders. But we did some really basic coaching with them, and we used what I would consider low fidelity simulation. We took two telephones that were, you know, broken on the nursing unit, and we put them in a room, and we had, because you had to kind of feel that holding the phone. I mean, because it really helps to develop that, that skill. But we would give them scenarios, and we would have one person play the role of the physician and the other person play the role of the nurse that was caring for that patient on the unit. And we would give them the scenario, and then they would role play it out. And there's some Academy Award winning actors and actresses that are in nursing. But what they did was they would go back and they would behave exactly. And they, the nurses would giggle because they would go, "Oh, that's Dr. So-and-so. Oh, you're doing." And it wasn't like they were trying to mock the physicians, but mm-hmm. what they were doing was really role playing exactly what they had experienced. And they were trying to have someone else help them, coach them through how to change that communication style. Mm-hmm. So we use here in America, SBAR, you know, using that acronym of situation, background, the assessment and your recommendations. And so we taught the new nurses to use that, and they had heard about it and they studied it and they read about it in nursing school, but they'd never applied it. So then it was, you know, boots on the ground. You got to apply it. You got to practice it. You got to practice it all the time. And then the more you practice, the better you are at it. And so that was one of the things that we found with these nurses, is that we practiced in a protected, simulated environment in the classroom with role playing, and we would debrief. And the role, the actual participation, was maybe 2 to 3 minutes. But the debrief portion lasted 30 to 45 minutes because they would come up with all sorts of challenges and well, how would you respond to this? And so that's where the learning happened for us. And that was, you know, quite impressive to be able to see. And that was something that we continued to work on. But we engaged the physicians to help us with that. So we had them come and help us with role playing. We would find that one physician who didn't like nursing, because everybody's got one, who was always, you know, "Nurses don't know what they're doing. You know, I'm angry. They don't take care of my patients." And we would say, "Well, then help us. Teach us what you want your nurses on this unit that are caring for your patients. You tell us exactly how you want that to happen in that interaction, and give us the feedback and let us practice so that we can be better and we better serve our patient, because it's not about you and it's not about me. It's about our patient." And that took a long time, because that was, you know, conversations that had to happen at the C-suite level with the CNO. It had to happen at the directors, at, you know, these medical staff meetings. And then it had to happen every single day on the nursing unit. And you had to have skilled nurses that were preceptors or more experienced nurses to be able to stand up to that physician and say, "Hey, now, wait a minute now. That's not what you said to me yesterday. And now, you know, and call them out on their behavior," because we're all professionals, regardless of what field that we're in. We all have a key role to play. And that was something that we worked, you know, a lot on. And it took us months, but we had a physician who was one of what we would call a hospitalist. So he managed the care of the patients from a medical standpoint while the patient was in the hospital. And we had one that, you know, was just constantly negative. And so we just kind of picked at, you know, whittled away at having conversations, you know, and forcing him to have conversations with us. And, "Well, tell us what you want. Tell us, let's role play that. Here, let me get my nurse to call you. And every time this happens, I want to know, as the nurse leader, I want to know when it's not working and I want to know when it's working." Mm-hmm. And by having that, and really the frontline nurse managers having those conversations often with the support of the directors, that was something that we saw the change. Now, you know, that was a moment where we did need to use education, because it was not just a knowledge deficit, but it was a skill set that they had never applied. They learned it in nursing school, but they hadn't applied it in the practice environment. So we had to practice. And that's, you know, that evolution, it took months for some of our nurses to get really good at it and not be terrified with talking to this doctor. But once they realized there's a human on the other end, and both of them were accepting of, we're both human and we make mistakes and we're trying to communicate and we're not doing it for our prestige, we're doing it for the patient, that that whittled away at those walls. So, but yeah, that was definitely so, something. Yes, ma'am.
This is all, like you are saying, you practice different things, different scenarios and other things. So, and this takes time. And over here, we have very, very high need of nursing. So, if you go to a ward and you want to improve things, they're going to say, oh, we don't have time for that. We have to take care of our patients. People are sick. So what do you tell them?
Right.
Like how do you start if the situation mm-hmm. is that bad?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting that you say that because we always use that excuse. Before COVID, we used that excuse. We're busy. We're short staffed. We don't have time to pull nurses out of staffing to do this education, or we don't have time to have a meeting to talk about our feelings or give feedback. You do. And that's where leader rounding happens, where nurse leaders at every level round on those nurses and round and hear and have conversations. Because sometimes it's those hallway conversations that are more tidbits of information than you'll hear in a boardroom meeting, because you won't get that feedback. And so, you know, even having the conversations that, you know, in the elevator or that, you know, and we teach nurses and we teach people how to do elevator pitches. That's the perfect time is when you corner somebody. But to pull them out in formal training, sometimes that does take a long time, and it is about timing. And you have to take the opportunity to do it in small steps, but in small pockets. So, and maybe it's that you start with one particular unit, whether they're, you know, you can look at it a couple of different ways. Are they highly engaged nurses and staff, or are they what I would say is on the job retired? they're there, they're working, but they really don't want to work, because they're both valuable as well to give you feedback, because those are the people who are sitting back, not doing anything to contribute, but they're observing and they can tell you exactly what's not working because they've been watching. So, you know, I think there's a couple of different ways to do it. And I think it's really about, again, doing your patient assessment of your unit and your hospital and doing your entire head to toe assessment and making a care plan based off of that. And then changing your plan because it didn't work, or, you know, you need to do it a little bit differently. There was many things that we did that we felt like that were going to work. And we were like, yeah, you know, we were super hyped about doing it. We would put together, we'd spend all this time, because my department that I had was the education department. So I was the director of professional practice and critical care. I was in 126 bed hospital, not very big. But we had an emergency department, we had an intensive care unit, and I was blessed to have educators that reported directly to me. So when there was a project that there was a rollout that was going to happen in the labor and delivery unit, it was all hands on deck. Every member of that education department was there to support that one professional development specialist, because at the same token, we were going to do another rollout and another education event. His or her colleagues were right there to help them, you know, to help get that unit up and running. So it really took a team approach and had to have a lot of buy-in. The challenge was that sometimes there were things that we did that we thought were going to work and they failed miserably. And we just kind of had to, you know, pick ourselves up and say, okay, that didn't work. What was it? What out of that worked and what didn't work, so we can not do that again, you know? So, but again, you know, our from the day that I started to the day that we got the phone call from the magnet recognition program ended up to be 7 years. It wasn't 10, it was 7. And, you know, I think that we probably even did it sooner than I thought, because when my CNO was like, oh, I think we're ready to apply for a magnet. And I guess, no, we're not ready. And I remember the day he was like, Lynn, we're ready. We're going to do this. And I'm like, okay. So, you know, with a lot of caution and a lot of anxiety, we started, you know, writing to those sources of evidence, and it was like, you know, writing your memoirs and going back and looking back and going, wow, we've done a lot in the last 4 years. So, cause your document, your magnet document is going to be based off of the 4 years, of work that was done. So if, you know, you were to submit a written document in February of 2022, that's going to be a historical account of all of the structures and processes that you put in place from 2018 to 2022. That's a lot of time. And if you think about it in that respect, we've had a lot of things happen to us in healthcare during those 4 years. So, yeah.
So you always have to prove what you did in the hospital to improve to meet the magnet requirements, right?
Sure. Yeah. And also you write about your failures. So it's not all about successes. It's about, you know, your failures. And, you know, our prime example of writing about a failure was our Cotty situation that I just described. I mean, who'd have thought that having a new par cart with this beautiful system, and it was pretty and it was nice, and, you know, it really helped materials management, because they were finding that, you know, they were having some cost savings measures. And it was great for them, but it was horrible for the nurses. And so that was a prime example of, you know, you got to include everyone when you make a change. And if you don't, there could be a potential for fallout. So it's always important to evaluate. Yep. And your front line is your bottom line. So you got to ask your staff. They'll tell you exactly what's wrong, and they'll tell you what's working. Mm-hmm. So, and you want to hear from them. And as a leader, you can't be discouraged by things not happening overnight. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's probably one of the hardest things for us, especially right now in the time and age of a nursing shortage. That is probably the worst nursing shortage I've ever seen. And we can't produce enough nurses or get them to the workforce and to the bedside fast enough. So
yeah, it's the same in Germany. Yeah,
it's universal.
Yeah,
I talk to organizations across the world every day, and it is a universal, while it makes you feel better that you're not the only one that it's happening to, it also is a very scary thing that it's happening everywhere.
So the solution to get stuff from other countries,
it's not we're just stealing from each other.
Yeah.
It's not very kind. you can't put a Band-Aid on an open femur fracture and think that the person's going to survive. Right. And that's a pretty graphic depiction, but when you've got, you know, you can die from an open femur fracture, because the volume of blood that you lose so quickly is phenomenal. So I make that graphic comparison, because that's what's happening. And we can't fix it fast enough. And so for us individuals who are fixers, and many of us are, because we went into healthcare to take care of people, it becomes very personal and very frustrating. And so, you know, that's the other piece that we have to make sure, is that we're taking care of our nurse leaders and our leaders. So there's this, you know, that sandwich that I mentioned before, where that nurse leader is working so hard, but they've got directors in the C-suite that's, you know, really saying, you know, you're spending too much money, there's too much overtime, you know, and then you've got your nurse, your frontline staff who are talking about, you know, I'm tired, I can't come in. You know, I don't care how much money you give me right this second. You know, I want to be at home and I need to take care of myself. And so we have to figure out that balance, but we've got to take care of that frontline nurse leader, or they're going to leave nursing. And that's probably one of the biggest turnover areas, is the nurse manager role. So.
So what is that? You worked in the hospital and now you're mm-hmm. at the ANCC. What's your biggest motivation? Like, what's your personal motivation?
My drive? Well, to be able to do things like this today, Nora, and talking with you and Kirsten and being able to share my story and hear other people's stories and do introductions. So the beauty of my role as the education and outreach program manager for the Magnet Recognition Program and the Pathway to Excellence Program is I can tell my story and tell people how I lived it and that you can do it too, but also to connect other individuals. So I will hear from an organization, you know, some of their challenges or, you know, they're doing something great. And I'm like, oh, that's a really cool story. Let me introduce you to so-and-so because they're working on something very similar. And you guys could, you know, really probably benefit from talking to one another. Yeah. And so, you know, some of that's the beauty of this role. So I feel like I'm caring for the nurses who are caring for the patients. So I may not be that direct caregiver, but I'm hopefully being able to provide them with those structures and processes that can give them their outcomes, whether it's doing introductions to connect or, you know, just saying, hey, I'm here for you and I'll listen. And just being an ear to listen to. So
yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
It's more a supportive role. And I think it's interesting you don't say it, you tell them what they can do better. You tell them your story and they can learn from your story.
Oh yeah, I call them Lynn's life lessons. LLLL. And my poor daughter, she goes, "Oh, I know, Mom, Lynn's life lesson number." And I'm like, "That's right, because you know you learn from your failures. I mean, your successes are great, but I can tell you that there are way more failures than our successes. And even the story example that I use." That was a failure at first. I mean, that was a giant, just, it was awful. You know, we couldn't figure out what was happening and everybody was angry and people were frustrated and the nurses were mad. But we weren't even really talking to the frontline nurses at first. It was, you know, it was the quality department saying, "Oh, your data is terrible. And, you know, what are you going to do to fix it?" And then the CEO's like, "We're losing money because your nurses aren't taking care of your patients the right way." And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute here. You know, so then it was like, okay, let's figure out what the problem is. Yeah. And that's where, you know, my colleagues in the quality department were like, they were watching the trend and they're like, whoa, pause, time out. There's an issue and something's going on. Let's dive into it. And so, you know, when you go for months or years without a problem, and then all of a sudden you have an issue, that's pretty gleaning. But you know, when so many things are happening, and that's what some of the frontline staff described is there's so many bad things happening all the time right now. We can't just even look at, you know, going back and saying, you know, what's that one thing that's driving you crazy? Cause it's not one thing. There's a whole list of them. And they are a domino effect. So
and that's the other thing. What I liked about the Magnet for Europe study is it gives you you can look outside of the box. You can go into a communication with other hospitals, like hospitals in America. They have a long experience and they show us process or how they restructure their houses, and the German hospitals or the other European hospitals can learn from each other. And
right.
Sometimes there are things that you learn from the European country. So it's
a nice definitely. Way of, definitely. I mean, I sharing. Think that, yeah, for sure. And I really think that there are things that Europe has been doing for years that it's like, well, why didn't we think of that? You know, why are we doing it this way? It makes no sense. So, sharing some of that is great. And we learn from that the storytelling. And I every once in a while I'll have somebody say, oh, I want to hear a Lent life lesson today. And I'm like, oh gosh, okay. You know, and so it's like, tell me a topic, because I could tell you where I failed in that category. so, you know, but it wasn't, you know, oftentimes it's not just failures. It's there are successes out of those failures. And I think that's where, you know, the beauty of Magnet lies, is that it is about showing your best foot, putting your best foot forward and showing that outperformance. But you had to go from one place to another. So it's really, you know, Magnet is very focused on outcomes and the data, but you have to structurally have structures and processes in place. The assumption that it is there, that is already occurring. And the assumption is that you are already providing food, water, and shelter to your nurses. That's the given. Mm-hmm. The practice environment has to be there. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you cannot outperform and self-actualize, as Maslow said. So that self-actualization is your outperformance and your benchmarking and being able to show the great work. Yep.
Thank you, Lynn, that you shared with us.
Yeah, sure. My pleasure. Yes, of course. You know, I'm grateful to be able to have the conversation with you guys today. I'm so excited that you're, you know, learning and talking and sharing about this. And Kristen, to your point, you know, with the health services research program, that, you know, again, it's not just about nursing. While this is a nursing recognition program, it really takes every single individual that works within that organization to take care of that patient. And so that's why I say, you know, even in my role now, is I'm still taking care of patients. I'm just doing it in a different way.
Yeah. Interprofessional becomes more and more.
Yeah. Oh, yes. You have to, because if you live in your silo, you're going to have issues like my Cotty story.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah. then I think we learned a lot, especially we learned it's not some kind of wonder. It's I think everything you said is such basic things. You have just to follow it and go step by step, and don't want to jump in something. You
right.
have to go step by step and take everything with everyone with you. So that's what I learned.
Yes.
And
definitely. And that it doesn't happen overnight. And don't get frustrated when it doesn't happen overnight. I think that's the biggest thing, is that we want to see that immediate change. And now looking back, I'm like, wow, that really did, you know, there was a lot of things that happened transformational wise in our organization over a very short period of time. But while I was living in it, it felt like an eternity.
Yeah.
So that's a hard
thing.
But you have to be patient.
I think you said you have to write a report for Magnet.
You do. Yes.
Yeah.
You are writing your document, which are answering what we call sources of evidence. So the manual, and Nora probably talked about the components within the application manual. Yeah. And each one of those has a series of what we call source statements. And you respond to that statement, so that you tell your story.
Yeah, and by doing this, you look back and you see the progress you made.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
It is. It's a nice historical account of the work that your organization has done. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think not many hospitals take time to look back. What do
no,
we have
we're always looking ahead.
Yeah.
But you learn
do,
from
not what have you done. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. And you learn from that, because that's the reflective part. And we're always so busy forging ahead, but it's kind of like history. If we don't talk about the history, we don't learn from the history, and we don't learn from those mistakes or those blessings, because we didn't take time to reflect.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good ending point.
Well, great.
We take time in our processes. So Lynn, I'm very, very happy that you shared your stories with us. Thank you for your time. Also, Nora, thank you for your time and your knowledge. And
you're welcome.
that we can do this.